Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in his province, growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
All right, time now for the Growing the Game podcast, brought to you by our good friends Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff over there at Mako Collision Repair in Regina, 2337th Avenue. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako. And we'll start this Growing the Game podcast with a segment I like to call Ball and Paul on Football. I'd be Ballsy, he would be Paul Waldo, three-time Grey Cup champ. And Paul, let's start at the East Final first, and let's go back to the clothesline play on Kevin Glenn. I know the rule book says it was a penalty, but I like to say if they let the guys play in playoff football, you players would be okay with that, kind of like the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Absolutely. When you watch the rewind and you say, well, he had his arm up there, but I don't think he was overly malicious. And after that moment, I said, okay, they're going to let these boys play. And I actually liked it. You know, I like letting guys play, and you almost – the expectation, the stakes are going to be higher. Like we said, you can, you know, the best analogy would be playoff hockey, you know, even playoff basketball. It just gets turned up a little bit more.
A lot of fans were thinking there was a conspiracy that they want the Toronto Argonauts in the Grey Cup. I would think if there was a conspiracy, they'd want the Riders in the Grey Cup because all the fans would go to the game and it would be a sure sellout.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously for the league as a whole, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want Rider Nation to be there and be there in full effect? So yeah, I actually agree with your thoughts on that. I mean, conspiracy, that I think that's pretty stupid, to be honest with you. It's professional sports and things are not going to go the way you want. You know, or would people say it was a conspiracy if it went the other way? Probably not. So I mean, I think people just try to find excuses. And the reality of it is, I mean, it was a defensive battle. I don't think either offenses were that effective. And it came down to arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the history making plays. And that's I guess, all there is to it.
Well, two things. I think it came down to the fact the Riders, I was surprised, didn't get much pressure or didn't put much pressure on Ray on that last drive. Were you surprised by that?
You know, I agree with you. Ricky's a guy that, I mean, you can't just let him sit back and throw the football. And even to take it even further back, on that same drive, I don't know if you remember, but it was a second and five or – yeah, I think it was a second and five, and Ricky ended up throwing through his dart. It was an out route, I believe, to maybe Armani Edwards.
It actually was a third and five, and it was the one down the seam, wasn't it, to Wilder talking about there?
No. I'm talking before that.
Okay.
The drive, they converted on second and five where he threw an out route.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't remember who was doing it. He drug his feet inbounds. It was a beautiful catch. Tight throw, tight window. I'm like, man, these guys got to get pressure after him or he's going to work all the way down the field. And then we had the third and five conversion, obviously, to Wilder as well. And then he threw the ensuing play. He threw that dart to Armani Edwards that he caught on the 2-yard line, right? So that window was so small in itself as well. So, you know, playing the best, you got to bring pressure after him. You got to make him feel uncomfortable, and you can't let him finish a throwing motion. You know, to be honest with you, I thought – That defense, I thought Chris Jones was basically going to show the same things that Coach Hamlin did on his side of the ball when they brought pressure constantly, no matter it was Kevin Glenn or Brandon Bridge.
Now, Mark Trestman has a week off, and we're talking about how dangerous he is. And I think we saw, you know, that play to Wilder was one of those bye week plays where you pull it out when you need it.
I listened to his post game there, and yeah, and they talked about that play. They made reference to it where they put it in last week, but it was a change in formation essentially, and they were waiting for the right time to get the matchup. They didn't call it all day, and they felt the Trestman always finds any type of man-to-man one-on-one coverage as the advantage, and they felt like they got a guy like Wilder on a linebacker and were able to convert. So you know, the chess match, the saga continued throughout the entire game, and Trestman and company did what they normally do.
So you played how long in the Canadian Football League, Paul Waldo?
Eight full seasons.
Eight full seasons, and you were in the Grey Cup four times, winning three of them. Do you pinch yourself about that? That's an amazing run of luck and skill, but luck.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, it's no secret. You know, you do as much as you can, I think, to continue to play in the longevity of your career, make sure you make a good enough impression for teams to obviously keep you. But yeah, I mean, to have those, I mean, it really is. The older I get now, too, and now that I'm away from the game, physically you start to appreciate it a little bit more. But I mean, it's been a true blessing, and I'm excited for obviously players who are getting the opportunity to go to a Grey Cup and never have.
What's it like? What's it like that whole week?
You know what? It's pretty intense. I think your family and your friends and you know, everybody outside of the guys playing the game really enjoy it a lot more than you do. You're so focused and you know, you're so close to your goal. It's within grasp, but you do end up enjoying like the breakfast media lunch. There's like a media lunch in, and there's a breakfast thing that you go and you happen to do a lot of media and you mingle with a lot of people. And that part of it's pretty enjoyable. And I mean, the best part about it is like I said, just looking back, you know, in that week, you look back at the entire season itself and all the ups and downs that you've been through, and you just realize it's not just about the Grey Cup itself, but it's the journey that gets there, you know. It's not just the physical ring or being able to hoist the cup, but everything that you have to go through from training camp, you know.
It's amazing what Mark Trestman and Jim Popp have done, taking this team over in March, and they get them to the Grey Cup. I know 9-9 and 6 of the regular season wins came against Eastern Division teams, but they're here in the big game now. Calgary has got to be the heavy favorite. So how do the Argos win this game in your mind if they can?
If they can, I mean, they got to be perfect. I think they got to do the same type of things that they did last week in regards to bringing pressure on Bo. You can't just let him sit in the pocket because that's one thing that Bo, I think, does better than anybody. He plays in the pocket well. He steps into the pocket. He's not a guy that panics a whole lot. So you're going to have to bring pressure. You're going to have to, like Ottawa did last year, you're going to have to make him feel incredibly uncomfortable and force him to make error throws like he did last year, throwing, I think, 2 interceptions in a half, and he didn't do that all year in back-to-back games. So that's going to be one thing, and I think they're going to have to win on special teams. I think they're going to have to make a couple big plays, just like the Riders did last week, you know, doing what they did with Christian Jones and being huge in the return game. But it's got to be a full effort. They got to win in all three phases, and they'll have to get them all back on defense and hopefully score like they did.
Now, I don't think Calgary's a juggernaut by any sense. If Jason Moss maybe had half a brain, maybe Edmonton wins that game. That's ridiculous.
But crazy.
That goes down as one of the dumber calls ever. But anyway, the Calgary Stampeders, they're coming with a chip on their shoulder. I know they're not a juggernaut, but I don't see them losing this game. How about you?
Me either. You know, listening to Dave Dickinson earlier this week, and he talked about, you know, last year when they stepped on off the plane, when they landed in Toronto, he said, quote, we had a, what did he say? We were very relaxed. He said they really did take, they took it for granted. He said they had felt like they had just showed up and that they were going to win, and that's just what was going to happen. They were going to take the Grey Cup back to Calgary. You know, and that means a lot, you know, to me for your head coach to admit that. And, you know, you had players that talked about it. Bo Levi talked about it. But it shows how significant it really was. And that's how the whole organization felt. So going into it this year, we talked about it, Ballsy, at end. I mean, the last 4 weeks of the Calgary Stampeders in the regular season, you know, they lost 3 games, 3 of the 4. They got beat up pretty good. And I think it humbled them.
Okay, Paul, lastly, before we let you go, my friend, the Vanier Cup will be awarded this weekend, too. Laval against Western Mustangs, and Western's been rolling. Do you see how do you see this one shaking down?
Oh, man, you know what? I think it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a fight till the end. And, you know, as high juggernaut as the Western Mustangs are, the one thing that Laval does, and they've done it for years, if you ever watched their game, even looking back at last week, they were down 10-0. They just continue to get better as the game continues to go on. When you have other teams that usually end up crumbling or can't handle the pressure, and no matter if they're down, because the fault that, you know, 2 years ago, or I guess last year, they were down 14-0 to Calgary. You know, and they just always find a way to battle back. They're so composed. So I see it being a pretty tight one, but I think Laval pulls it out in the end.
That's Paul Waldo, 3-time Grey Cup champ and a guy on our broadcast that's done a great job this year on the 620 CKRM Rough Rider Radio Network. This is the Growing the Game podcast. Thanks for this, Paul.
Thanks, guys. And like I said, we'll see you on Sunday there, Baldy.
Time to take you behind the scenes now on the Growing the Game podcast. This week I was down in the Rider locker room as they had garbage bag day, and Daron Carter, who is the media darling this year, held court in the locker room talking about his future with the football club.
I don't know, man. To tell you the truth, it's all up to me. I haven't even thought about it, you know. But I love my teammates. You know, being here is definitely something that I, you know, want to do. Coming back with Naaman and Bridge and KG and everybody, it definitely, you know, feels like home. So definitely, you know, I would love to stay.
You put up some crazy tape though this year, from catches to interceptions and returns and those kind of things. Would you be surprised if the NFL doesn't call?
No, it's a whole lot of, you know, politics and media and stuff. You know, if the NFL calls, you know, it's not like I'll deny their phone call. But, you know, I have my own life and stuff I got to get handled. I can't just be waiting on, you know, other people and how they feel, or if they, you know, if they don't want to pull the trigger because they have some type of reservations. I can't, you know, be waiting on them.
Would you like another crack at it, though, down south?
You know, playing in the NFL has been my dream since I could remember. You know, that's what I've always wanted to do. So in the right situation, I would definitely love to be there. But, you know, like I said, I'm 26, going on 27. I got to make some life choices in a sense. So, you know, I can't just keep waiting.
Might be on the other side of the ball. Would you be okay with that? Heard there was some skills looking at you as a DB.
I just love playing football, you know, whether it be offense or defense. Yeah, I love playing defense this season. Anything to help a team out. For me, it's just all about playing and being in the right situation. You know, I think it kind of shows that I'm in the right situation here, and, you know, and I can thrive in that. So in any situation I can be like that, I would love to go.
What's your emotion today, a day after the loss?
Oh, the same. You know, I wasn't particularly too distraught. We played a great game. I tried my hardest. I was trying to do everything I could possibly out there. And to me, I mean, I thought we had it won.
It's the Growing the Game podcast rolling along here, brought to you by our good friends at Mako. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see Alan and the gang at 2330 7th Avenue in Regina. I am here with Zeljko Stefanovic, and when we talk about building the game of football, growing the game of football, this guy definitely falls in that category. Supports lots of local initiatives, the Rams and a bunch of teams. And he's a guy that is running the South Selects football program. Zeljko, welcome to the podcast. And how long have you been running this program for?
Michael, this is our sixth full season of running the Selects.
Wow.
We started with 32 kids or 34, 36 kids, I think, we had our first year, you know, with a bunch of dads that wanted to just have some fun with the kids, and then it's grown to what it is today.
And what is it today? How many kids are taking part in this thing now? Like, I know you guys had a workout here just during the Eastern final weekend here. You were in Moose Jaw at the Yara Center.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, like this year, we kind of shortened it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like last year was kind of hairy because I think we had 500 kids come out.
Wow.
But this year we're only taking three. Three teams, a 12U, a 14U, and a 16U. We had 330 kids come out for that. And then we're thinking about maybe taking an 11U, depending on whether the parents want to travel or not. But so we have three teams for sure coming, you know, out of our region. And then we have a Manitoba Selects program that started this year. So they're taking two teams with us to San Antonio. So all together, I think we're going to have about five or six teams that we're going to be taking.
Awesome. So in terms of making this team, where do the kids come from, and how does the tryout process work, Zeljko?
So the kids are from all over the province, Michael. Like, you know, we've had, like this year, we have kids for us from as far north as LaRange and Arrange. And then, of course, from all other corners of the province, like, you know, Shaunavon, Maple Creek area, all the way to Estevan, and, you know, to the, you know, U.S. border. And then, of course, we have quite a few kids from that Assiniboia-Rockland area. And then, you know, Saskatoon and Prince Albert. I mean, the kids are from everywhere.
Yeah, no, my boy's been a part of it, and it is definitely a good training ground and helping to grow the game of football. So who's helping you coach? Who helps coach these various teams?
So, this last weekend, we had approximately 40 coaches that we gathered from all over the province. We brought in one coach, former Super Bowl champion, Anthony Davis. He came and helped with the defensive line and linebackers. That was kind of the only guy that, a guest coach that we brought in. And then the rest of the guys were, we use a lot of the former Rams, current Rams, some Huskies players, former Huskies, current Huskies. Dan Farthing was helping us this weekend. We had Matt Sheridan, a former CFL player. Jerry Friesen, who played in the CFL, was the head coach of University of Alberta at one time, and then now he's coaching at U of S. Lane Briska from the U of S. Greg Nesbitt from the Rams. So we try to our motto is that we want the coaches to challenge the kids. So I don't care if they're 10 or 11 or 12 years old. We want them to challenge the kids, and being able to gather that many coaches in one place, and in our coaches meeting prior to the camp beginning, I said, you know what? Don't dumb it down for anyone, because these kids can handle it. Mm-hmm. So we use the same playbook from our 10 and 11 year olds to our 16 year olds. It's just a little bit more expanded. The verbiage is the same, but we want to challenge the kids.
Yeah, and that's obviously part of growing the game of football for sure, and you don't want to dumb it down. You'd be in a great position to speak about this, Zeljko Stefanovic. Just how good a job this province does, and you're part of it, in growing the game of football and really producing high-quality athletes, because Saskatchewan on the national map does an unbelievable job. You look at the U18 team, last 2 years they've been in the final game. They came up the runner-up both times to Quebec, but this is quite a province for growing football players.
Well, I tell you, for the size of the province we are, it's amazing how many, like this was, and you know this better than I do, this was the most highly recruited area in all of Canada last year. Like, there wasn't one university that didn't make a visit to Saskatchewan last year for recruiting players. And out of the 36 kids that we had originally as 12 U's that we took down to San Antonio, Michael, 24 of those kids have commitment letters or scholarships to either a Canadian university or I think one kid's got might have an offer with a U.S. university. So, I mean, it's amazing the talent pool that is actually here. And we just have to develop it. And that's what we want to do, is we want to develop the talent.
Yeah, what do you like about football? Why is it important for you to be involved in this, Zeljko? You kind of touched on it there, but maybe you can expand on it.
Well, I tell you, I've played it, you've played it. It's the greatest team sport ever. The kids come out of there, and we've seen it with our 11-year-olds now that are, turning 13 and 14. The bonds that they've developed with some of their friends are unbelievable. And I mean, we hear that all the time from, the parents that contact us after the kids have gone or the following year after one of our seasons. And they tell us the amazing difference that a program such as ours has made for their kids in self-confidence and being able to interact with other kids in a lot better way. Like, we have one kid from Saskatoon. He came as a very, very shy kid, and we groomed him because he was so much bigger than everybody else. He always had to play up. Well, in our program, you don't have to play up if you're bigger, because it's not weight based. Mm-hmm. It's all age based. So we want the big kids to come into our program because they're great offensive or defensive linemen.
That's right. Big kids, small kids, if they're interested in football, their parents are interested, how do they get it hooked up with the South Selects football program?
Well, they just have to Google South Sask Selects, and I mean, our Twitter page will show up, our website will show up, our Facebook will show up. So, like, we're, our social media stuff is all over the place. So,
yeah,
it isn't hard to find.
So, and you're going down to San Antonio this year, is that correct? Or next year, I guess, like early part of the year?
Yeah, in February we're gonna, during this February break, we're gonna take, four teams and then two Manitoba teams, all the way to San Antonio and play in the Pigskin Classic. And there's teams from California there that have already committed to go in Virginia. There's a team from Mexico that's gonna be there, so it's gonna be a fun time.
That's Zelko Stefanovic with the South Sask Selects football program. Thanks for this, Zelko.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Well, the Growing the Game podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see Alan and Joe and the gang over there at 2330 7th Avenue in Regina. Okay, time to take a walk down memory lane now with former Rider great Gary Lewis. The Grey Cup's going to be played on November 26, 2017. Well, on November 26, 1989, the Saskatchewan Roughriders won their second ever CFL championship, and number 79, Gary Lewis, was very instrumental in that playoff success. 1988, you guys finally have a home playoff game. And Gary Lewis, what do you remember about that 88 playoff game? I was in the stands. It was damn cold.
That was the first thing to come to my mind. It was the weather there. I had been used to playing in weather like that before, but it was freezing out there. But, you know, we still had a lot of support, you know, of the fans and support us and stuff, but that was the first impression. It was cold, just like you said.
Set the table for the 89 season, which was mediocre record-wise, 9-9, but, you know, take us back to the 89 season, Gary Lewis, and just your thoughts on that, because it was a remarkable and really something, a run that fans weren't expecting.
You know, the thing about 89 is that, you know, we believe that we were the best team, you know, going into the playoffs. You know, a lot of other people did not believe that. You know, we just took it, you know, one game at a time. And that was our whole philosophy back then, you know, take it one game at a time, one play at a time, you know. And we surprised a lot of people because a lot of people didn't expect for us to be there and did not expect for us to win. But, you know, we knew what we were capable of doing, and we just went out there and proved it. Game in Edmonton was very emotional. And after that game, we just felt like we were destined to go in and win the Grey Cup. But to me, it was the Grey Cup victory was better to me because that's what we play for. You know, you play to win, and you play to win the Grey Cup. So, it was better for me.
As an Oklahoman, a guy who comes up to Canada, you're here now for a while. They win the Grey Cup, but did you really understand what it meant to the province when you had won it?
Not until after we had won it, and I saw the province, how everybody was very appreciative, very emotional about it and stuff. I really didn't understand it until we got back to Regina.
All right, before we get to our next guest, just want to give some accolades out here. Want to say good luck and congratulations, too, to Nick Cross, who's up for Rookie of the Year honors out of the University of Regina Rams. He's down east of the Vanier Cup festivities in the run-up to the big game between Laval and the Western Mustangs. Also want to give a shout-out to Tom Sargent and the Saskatoon Hilltops for their championship, 7th in the last 8 years and 4th straight, which is unprecedented, so good on him. And also the North of Dewdney Junior Riders, coached by Tyler Lloyd here in Regina. They won the 11- and 12-year-old flag football championship at the Grey Cup week, so they'll go down to Orlando for the Pro Bowl. Okay, our next guest has been a Grey Cup MVP, speaking of championships during Grey Cup week. November 25th, 2001, Marcus Crandall, Grey Cup MVP, as Calgary beats Winnipeg in the Grey Cup, 89th Grey Cup, I believe it was. What do you remember about that day, Marcus?
No, it was a great day, Michael. It was just a day of memories of the season we had been through that year. You know, we got in with an 8-10 record, and we had a lot of injuries along the way, and including myself. And we got guys back at the right time, and we were able to put together a run of games, and and make it to the playoffs and then go on, of course, to win the Grey Cup.
Yeah, everybody's going to go into this game this week saying Calgary's got it, but as we saw in the game we just talked about between you guys and the Blue Bombers, who I believe were 14-4 that year, you guys were 8-10,
yes,
like you said, and then, you know, you look at the Argos here this year, they're 9-9, they beat the Riders, and Calgary kind of stumbled right down the stretch, but we saw last year, too, Ottawa knocks off Calgary. How do you think this game's going to go?
You know what? I think it's going to be one of the better games. Although last year was it's kind of hard to kind of reciprocate, but I think it's going to be very exciting. You have two great quarterbacks of the CFL who's done a lot for the league, and some defenses that's been holding their own as well. So I think it's going to be a great outing for both ball clubs and a good exciting game for the fans.
Now, Marcus Crandall is the offensive coordinator with the U of S Huskies. You just finished your first year. Obviously, record-wise, it wasn't what you wanted, but just your thoughts, you know, your foray into Canadian university football as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, my first year, and I was very excited about the opportunity to get back into football after being out for 2 years, and it kind of fed my passion, and it was good that way, and just coaching on a different level and being able to help some young men work a little differently, prepare a little differently, our thought process that Coach Scott kind of relayed to the guys is that, you know, they want to change up the culture and really our approach is more like a professional approach as much as possible, but they are still student athletes. So, our record wasn't as great as we hoped to be. But again, as you know, with football, injuries take its toll, and so we started off the season with our starting running back getting hurt, and then we had to adjust from there, and we ended up playing a lot of young guys in a lot of key positions. Mm-hmm. On both sides of the ball, but I think we have a lot of young talent that's going to help us out in the future.
Before I talk about the quarterbacking position, let's talk about one of those great young players on the offensive side of the ball at the position area in terms of running back, Shaq Harris, who is related to Andrew Harris. I was at your last game against Manitoba. Man, that was a breakout. That was a breakout game for him.
You know what? When players like that, they just make it easier for coaches. They make us look good, because throughout the course of a game, it's a long game, and schemes and offensive schemes, defensive schemes are so complex nowadays that you need guys that are playmakers that can, you know, every now and then they can change the game for you, and so. Shaq came in, and it was his first start, and he did an outstanding job for us, and we look forward to what he's going to help bring to the table for us going forward.
I talk to Paul Waldo quite regularly because we do the Rough Rider broadcast together, and he's on this podcast with me regularly too, and he was talking about your situation in Saskatoon at the quarterback spot with Kyle Siemens and Mason Nias. 1A and 1B, like they're both right there. Just talk about each of those guys. We'll start with Kyle. What kind of attributes he brings to the table as he's kind of going into his last year of eligibility here?
Oh, man, Kyle, I'll tell you, he's a very tough young man. if you look at him physically, he's like a Tom Brady type of body. He's not very big and bulky or anything like that, but he's a very tough young man, and I like his poise in the pocket. I like his ability to make the majority of the throws, and really he adapted to the way I like doing things as opposed to, you know, just how things have been done for him in the past. And so, and both of those guys as well, Mason Nias as well. And they just have two different styles. Mason, he's a quarterback that, you know, he has that almost kind of like a gunslinger mentality that, you know, he just gets the ball and he throws without the laces, which is unusual.
Yeah.
They're smart kids, and they make good decisions for the most part, and we're going to build upon that for next year.
How strange is that for you to see a guy like Mason Nyes throw without the laces and throw the way he does? Because I thought one of the good performances this year, and Kyle had a great year, obviously, stats-wise. He would have loved to have more wins in the win column as a starting quarterback. But
right.
Mason comes
right.
in that Alberta game, and he threw for over 200 yards in the second half. How do you see this guy progressing? And here's where I'm going with this, because I know Scott Flory had said at the start of the year last year when he came in that all the positions were open for battle, but he kind of anointed Kyle the starter. Would you look at it going into this season as maybe it's kind of an open competition at that quarterback spot? How do you see that spot going?
Well, you know what, to be honest, Mike, we haven't really discussed that portion of it. But like you said, Kyle had a great season. And we wish that we had more wins to go along with his outstanding season.
Mm-hmm.
But from a quarterback standpoint, you know, when teams prepare, obviously they're going to prepare for the guy who's going to get the majority of the snaps a little differently than they do a guy that's going to come in as a backup. And who knows, that may be the plan next year, just to get Mason some more experience going forward and prepare him to take over the range after Kyle is gone.
I guess you don't want to rush a guy too early either, do you? You want to make sure
right.
that you're kind of being patient with him, right?
Exactly, and that goes for all of them. That goes for all of them. I think we're going to try and change the culture as far as that's concerned. Really help the guys grow and mature, and develop a little bit more football IQ and all those things. And I think this year was very beneficial for them that way. And to continue that.
You know, you mentioned Mason throwing without the laces. I found that strange, too. I've watched him grow up in Regina. How taken aback were you by the fact he just grabs the ball and throws it?
Oh, man. I couldn't believe it. I mean, Scott and I talked about it before I came, and to see it in person is amazing for sure. You know, just having played the position, I know how hard it is to throw a spiral with the laces.
Yeah.
And just to grab it and throw it, especially these footballs, you know, in the wintertime when it gets slick and all those kind of things. But he does an amazing job of doing it and making good throws.
What do you think your best attribute is, Marcus? I talked to actually both of those quarterbacks, and they liked your even keel demeanor. You don't get too high, you don't get too low. What do you think your best attribute is?
I think that's always been my approach to football. And Kyle and I sat and had a conversation as far as that's concerned as well, because of, you know, you be who you are, and we let the other guys have to. If you have a quarterback that's, take a Ricky Ray for instance. Ricky's not a rah rah type of guy, right? And so all the other leaders on the team have to step up and be what he's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the approach that I take as well. We surround ourselves with people that are, have different personality as far as coaching, as players, and I'm going to be who I'm going to be. And if someone doesn't like who I am, then you shouldn't have me here, knowing that going in or there, or whatever the case may be, and go forward. Because I believe that at the quarterback position, you have to have that mentality of, you know, things get high, you know, the next play it could go wrong. So you have to have that even keel and be really focused in on the game and focus on the next play.
Mm-hmm.
And I take the same approach as an offensive coordinator.
Did you have an eye-opener this year? Was there, you know, you've coached at the pro level before. Was there a big difference coming to the university ranks and teaching young men?
You know what? The thing that I had to adjust to is you know, just some of the rules and how defenses are allowed to do different things as far as, you know, the contact and all of that. And so, which is a major factor in when you're trying to scheme for defenses and things like that. So just adjusting to, you know, the speed of the game and how it's done and all the different nuances of CIS is compared to the CFL, which I've coached over the years.
Lastly, Marcus, a lot of talk's been made about Canadian quarterbacks and if they can make it at the next level. And I've talked about your two guys there. Are you impressed with how the Canadian quarterback position has kind of matured and how the guys, you know, athletically have evolved, and in particular your two guys, and you know, maybe, you know, if given the right opportunity, you never know what could happen with a Canadian quarterback.
Yes, I'm very impressed at how the kids have developed over the years. And you have some good guys that are leading the way right now. And so that's always obviously going to be a big help and a big case for more guys to open the door for the other guys. And so as long as they continue to have the right attitude and still press forward, just like anyone that's not allowed an opportunity, you're going to keep fighting, right? And so that's what they have to do is keep fighting. Until that door opens and they get the opportunity.
This guy was a fighter, and he fought his way to a Grey Cup MVP in 2001 and now patrolling the sidelines with the U of S Huskies as offensive coordinator. Thanks for this, Marcus.
All right. Thank you, Michael, for having me on.
All right, now on Growing the Game, we're joined by Jordan Hofford, former quarterback at Winston-Knoll, who is now with the Regina Thunder. That has a nice sound to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm very excited. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to play at the next level.
So how did that come together with you joining that team? Tell us about it.
Well, first it starts off in the high school. Like, all my coaches have put me, like, at this level where I am, like, and gave me an opportunity to play where I am, and I was talking to Scott McCauley, head coach of the Regina Thunder, for a bit, and he was interested in me, and he decided to pull through with the signing. I'm very excited.
So, what does he think about your playing in terms of you fitting into their plans? Where does he see you as a Thunder player in the near future?
Well, with their situation they're in now, their starting quarterback, Thorey Bittner, is probably going to leave and go play at a higher level. And that leaves two quarterbacks left there. So he's looking to fill some spots there. So, yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool, Jordan. So, Jordan, tell us about your year that was at Winston-Knoll. Obviously, the last couple of years you guys have struggled to win games, but you did have a bit of success this year under Chris Warnke.
Yeah, like since Mr. Warnke came up, he gave us a different kind of energy to the team, and he got us excited. But it was all about commitment with our team. We struggled with guys coming to practice all year, but we had some very good athletes that always put their heart out there in every game and helped us get close. But wish we could have won more games than we did, but I'm happy with the season, how it went.
Jordan Hofford joining us here, a quarterback with the Regina Thunder. He played with the Winston-Knoll Wolverines. I know your dad quite well. We went to high school together, and there was maybe some, you know, at some point you were kind of unsure whether you were going to play football anymore. What kind of pushed you over the top? Was it a meeting with Scott, or was it maybe a Mr. Warnke's influence this year?
Well, Mr. Warnke told me that I had the skill and ability to play at the next level, and it gave me, like, more confidence, because that was my problem. I just didn't have the confidence in myself to think I could be able to play, but he gave me lots of confidence in it, and I'm very excited now.
You'd think you'd listen to your flag football coach back all those years ago that told you you were a head quarterback,
yeah.
Huh? And Jordan.
Yeah.
Hey, for those that haven't watched you play, describe your play for us in terms of what kind of style you bring to the game.
Well, I like passing the ball a lot, but when I get to run it, I really enjoy that too. I scramble lots. I just like playing.
Yeah. You know? Now you're not around the 6 foot mark, so you're a little bit of a I don't want to say shorter quarterback, but you're not like the prototypical quarterback. So does that make you try to be a student of the game more and study the game more?
Yeah, I like to think of it that way too. I'm not the tallest guy. I have to practice, like, different ways, like, finding different windows, like, and just know where my receivers are going to be at all times and trust them that they're going to be there.
Jordan, how long have you been playing football for?
I've been playing since I possibly could, so probably 8 years.
Have you always been a quarterback?
No, I was running back and receiver to start, and then I got into quarterback, so I thought it was more exciting position, and it was more fun for me.
So who do you emulate? Who do you look up to? Like, who do you want to be like, or who kind of turned you on to football in terms of, you know, watching the sport on TV?
I like to look at Russell Wilson because he's not the very tallest guy. He's very athletic. He's quick. He can move around, and he can really chuck the ball. So I really like watching him.
Okay,
he's a very smart quarterback.
Let me ask you this. What was your – can you remember your first football memory or one of your earliest football memories?
It was probably when I was running back in Adams. I had a broke out a pretty long run, but instead of running straight ahead, I kind of veered off and I got caught from behind, and I was pretty embarrassed.
Got caught from behind, so you decided, you know what? Maybe I'm going to hand it to a running back and watch him run down the field. That's awesome.
Yeah, much better.
Okay, so as we go into the season here with the Thunder, what's Jordan Hofford's goal with the Regina Thunder this year?
I would like to be able to even have the opportunity to start as like as quick as I can. And even with playing in the Thunder, I wish I had the opportunity. I wish I could have the chance to even go up to the higher level, like university ball even.
All right. Well, that's awesome. And, of course, when you're with the Thunder, the one team to knock off for the Saskatoon Hilltops, I'm sure Scott McCauley's told you about that already.
Oh, yeah. They're always neck and neck every season. They've been really close to getting the Leafs. Couldn't pull it out this year, but I'm excited. Hopefully we can get in there and beat those guys.
One of the good young high school football players in Regina, that's Jordan Hofford. Jordan, thanks for this and best of luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, that'll do it for our 13th edition of the Growing the Game podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Make sure you tell all your friends and family and contacts in the football world, because the only way to grow the game is to share things like this podcast. Okay, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair in Regina. Go see Al and Joe and the gang over there at 2330 7th Avenue in Regina. Okay, and if you'd like to sponsor this program, hey, make sure you get a hold of me, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.